What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Milena Rigos. She's the founder of Unhustle and host of the Unhustle podcast. Something she said in this episode that I really like, and it encompasses everything that we talked about, was between burnout and boredom, there's alignment. We talk about both ends of the spectrum. So the people who work so super hard and then end up getting burnt out, or the people who aren't really working enough and are bored and aren't really working towards their goals. In between that lives alignment, which is what she talks about and what she helps people. And that's the balance between having fun and working hard. You know this podcast, that's all what we love and what we like to talk about. Milena has a fascinating story. She's a really fun person to talk to, and she had some pretty dope hobbies like kiteboarding, freediving, and playing the ukulele. She's a very adventurous person and really inspiring. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. I know I did. Thanks for listening to the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play
hard. Yeah, let's get started. For the listener, this is Milena Rigos.
Milena, yeah.
Milena Rigos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, founder of Unhustle, who's had a fantastic career in marketing. I was looking at some of the clients you've had, were like insanely impressive, like a list of clients to dream of, and then you kind of burned out. The story happens and the cycle goes, and through that, through those ashes, I guess, came Unhustle. So thank you very much for coming on the show, and you want to go over your kind of background, how you got here?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Armand. I, like we were talking earlier, you know, came from Bulgaria, high achiever, type A personality, came to chase the American dream, did my MBA in San Diego in international marketing,
nice.
Had 8 jobs while I was doing my MBA at some point in time, you know, studying at night. I really needed a job. So I found one that really caught my eye, and it was the ad said, if you love the mountains and skiing and you have a knack for marketing, this job is for you. And it was in Lake Tahoe. I grew up skiing. So I moved to Tahoe for work. Everybody thinks I moved there to ski, but I actually moved there to work, which led me to working for this company for a few years. And it was at the onset of online marketing. So I started their online division. I remember selling banner ads to Yahoo, telling them that we need to do banner ads because I need to sell them to my clients. And then explaining to people, I was spelling Google at parties, telling them about this new search engine that's coming up. You don't remember these days. I'm dating myself. But yeah, it was fun. The crazy wild days of the .com. And then I went to, I got a really great job. I was the marketing director for a ski resort for 10 years. So I got to combine skiing with marketing, which was fantastic. And then I eventually got burned out on being in corporate world and not being my own boss and not having my own flexibility and having to work every single Christmas and New Year's. And I just want more freedom and more flexibility, right? And I said, well, social media was taking off, and I started an agency rooted in social media and marketing strategy. And it was very, very fortunate. I worked with great clients, celebrities, amazing clients, flew all over the world, primarily in the recreation and health and wellness areas, travel and leisure. So that was fun. Without dropping any names, it was amazing experience. Yeah. And I built a little team, and we were winning marketing awards. We were doing everything that was fun and creative. And I was working 18-hour days, and I never had any time
That's
for
insane.
Myself.
I remember reading that, 18-hour days.
Yeah, I was sleeping with my phone, different time zones, just constantly working every week.
Wow.
And I think the only night off I allowed myself to really have off was Friday night. Because it's like, okay, it's Friday night. And we'll say, okay, let's have date night. And we'll cook a nice meal. And we'll sit down to watch a movie. And I fall asleep on the couch.
Yeah.
Because you're just exhausted, you know. So, yeah, total burnout, digestive problems, sleep, you know, problems, insomnia, all these things. Did nothing for fun. And, look, I lived in Tahoe, right? So, in a way, it was very conducive to spend a lot of time in the outdoors. And I did a little bit. But I felt like I was missing joy. I was missing
Wow.
You know, my health wasn't good. I was missing joy and I was missing purpose, really. Serving Facebook ads, and I don't care how great that client is, but just doing Facebook ads for people, it just felt like I didn't have any soul inspired success in that whole activity, you know? And so we came down to Baja, which was supposed to be a 10-day trip, which turned out to be a digital detox by default, not by design. There was no internet in town, right? So I, after a few days of going, I can't do anything on my phone.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's time. And then we decided, okay, let's learn how to kiteboard. And decided to replace boredom with kiteboarding. So I discovered this new world outside of working that's called living.
Having hobbies, doing stuff for fun, yeah. Wow.
Excuse me. Yeah, having hobbies, doing stuff for fun, human connection, you know.
Yeah.
Things outside of work that are challenging and purposeful and put you in flow, and it's just you forget about everything else, right? I mean, you want to talk about habits and hobbies, which I think are two great topics to talk about because they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
When you start finding that flow outside of work, you can also find it in work.
That's something so important. I've never heard it phrased that way, but I love that. Finding flow outside of work. That's really what, when I look for my own hobbies or like having fun, that's what I seek. That's like when I have fun in work, it's when it's like the flow state and I actually enjoy what I'm doing. Yeah. Wow. That's really important part to have. And I love that. I love that.
Yeah. So let me give you a little bit of research on that because it was eye opening for me when I realized what we're doing and where the disconnect is and why we actually work so much. So Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who's the godfather of the concept of flow, discovered in his research that even though we say we want to spend more time doing hobbies and having more leisure time, most of us feel creative, we feel challenged, we feel fulfilled at work. We end up at work, we end up about 64% of the time in flow state. So automatically, it makes us feel really good. Where in our leisure time, most of us, we experience this passive leisure time.
Hmm.
Which, according to his research...
So, like, mindless scrolling on social media,
TV, running errands, hanging on the couch, but not really doing anything.
Yeah.
And so, when we're in our leisure time, passive leisure time, we end up with about 20% of the time in flow state. So, automatically, we're drawn to more work because it makes us feel good. There's a bunch of hormones flowing through your body. They're feel-good hormones. So... sometimes we have to work because our company tells us we have to work, but sometimes we put that pressure on ourselves. You know, there's an external hustle and there's an internal hustle. And that's why I just want people to understand why we may be addicted to work. It's because of that flow state. It makes us feel good. So what's the solution to that, to the topic of your podcast, is to come up with hobbies that automatically or that draw you more into feeling engaged and putting you in a flow state. And it could be something challenging like kiteboarding, but it could be something like playing an instrument, right? Like a ukulele or something that engages your brain in a completely different way so you can mentally detach from work and you don't burn out.
Yeah. I've noticed it also really helps when the hobbies you have are somewhat like opposite of what the job you have is. So you can stimulate a different side of that brain and get into more of a flow. So like if you have a more analytical role, taking on a hobby like painting or guitar or music, like something on the more creative side, I've noticed like really helps me out at least to activate that. A lot of times when I have my marketing days and I'm more on the creative side of work, when I do something very analytical like chess, it really helps me kind of like switch on a different side of my head. So and they go hand in hand, like you learn lessons from one that kind of carries over to your hobby and vice versa. So yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, there was a couple of studies done in Paris with regards to that, and they found out that people who do things that are completely different from their work, like, you know, if you're sedentary at work, you do something active. If you're creative at work, you know, you do something more analytical, that their burnout rate is a lot lower and they're able to come back to work more refreshed, more rejuvenated, you know, with more energy as opposed to people who were doing more similar things. And then you, to your point, you're activating left brain and right brain. And so we want to use our whole brain all the time.
Yeah.
And then flow drives more flow. It's just that's how flow works. So if you start spending, which is why I talk about within hustle, create that high flow living and working, because I see it as a cycle. And not to say that we have to be in flow all the time. That's not going to happen either. But you have things to look forward to, you know, especially if you have a work addiction. If you have something to work forward to, that it is challenging. I mean, I had to figure out how not to die learning to kiteboard. So it was challenging, you know.
Yeah.
Once you go past the overwhelm state, then you can find that fine line between boredom and anxiety, which is where flow lives, right?
Yeah. And when you are kind of chasing that feeling and you're in something, such a different scenario, that's the fun part, is when you finally start getting a little comfortable. I'm sure once you started like getting good at kiteboarding, that's when you were really, really enjoying it. Because that's how I get.
Yeah, but I just came back from the water a couple of days back, and I didn't. My hair was still dry. I was like, uh-oh. Maybe the challenge has been too low, or maybe I just didn't push myself that day too much. So now I'm switching to kite surfing because I need that extra challenge. And when I look around me, people are switching to wing foiling because they need that extra challenge. Because
you're
learning different. So,
like kiteboarding and kite surfing. I've heard of kite surfing. I thought kiteboarding was similar or like that, but are they two different things?
Different board. You have the same kite, but one's more like a twin tip, like a snowboard, and the other is more like a surfboard. So it's one directional.
Mm.
So it's that a different.
That makes sense.
And then wing foiling, which is becoming really popular, is where a lot of people are moving to. Super challenging. I mean, it's super challenging. And I'm going, why are you guys so attracted to it? So just our human nature, you know, we like that challenge.
Yeah.
We like to feel like we're conquering, like we have a goal and you're improving. Which relates to what we do at work and how we set goals and we improve and set new goals. And that's the whole idea, right?
I did want to go back to something you said in the beginning. So it sounds like you kind of pioneered digital and social media marketing. Like you were at the very front of when it was happening, but you were also doing it and it was very tiring and you were working 18-hour days. What, I mean, besides the hardly any sleep and the long days and everything, but what was kind of like the trigger for you that you realized, okay, I'm doing well in work, but I also am experiencing a lot of stress and burnout? Like, how did you know that the bad side was creeping in?
You know, I started to notice, that's a great question. I started to notice, like my brain was developing ADHD.
Hmm.
I couldn't, you know, my attention started to get very fragmented. And I would spend all my day in front of a screen, and then I'll go to bed at night to relax, and I'll go to Pinterest, or I'll start reading a book and switch back to emails and go back to reading another book. And I realized that I was doing the same thing in real life. And that really scared me because that was my attention and my focus. And I realized that I don't want to go through my days doing that, you know, the multiple tabs, different projects, just doing a little bit of everything, not really feeling like you're accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do this.
Never really getting into flow state.
Right, right. Which is where I did a mindfulness-based stress reduction training for 8 weeks. And when I did that training with the Human Potential Institute, it was like somebody flipped a switch in my brain. And all of a sudden I realized, oh, you could be more mindful, you can be more intentional, you can do deep work and not go for that constant switching of tasks, that cognitive, you know, that cognitive overload, but also the cognitive context, the context switching, where we lose so much productivity and we lose so much focus just switching constantly. And social media does that naturally.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's designed to do.
Go and from so one video to the next.
Totally. It's just constant scrolling, bottomless scrolling, like what's going to catch my attention? That's why I wanted to get out. And maybe I pioneered social media. I feel like a dinosaur right now because I'm going, TikTok, what? I don't know how to use this.
Yeah, I guess that's where like a lot of the marketing goes now. But that's really interesting. So what would you say? So if someone has trouble with context switching. I have trouble with context switching. How what would you like recommend? What are some ways to get around that?
Yeah, I mean, that's where you do something like time blocking, right?
Hmm.
And and you focus on one task and you keep that task in front of you and you motivate yourself with, okay, I'm going to get this done before I move on to the next, right? It's really hard to do with that from the attention. But
yeah,
talking about deep flow, I mean, I don't, you know, different techniques, you know, Pomodoro techniques or whatever works.
I do like that one, yeah.
Clear goals, you know, having a clear goal that you want to accomplish something mm-hmm. that's fairly reasonable. And just having a deadline is very motivating. Actually, when I started to come down here to Baja, I realized that, you know, I have to get to doing one thing at a time because speed wasn't existing. So by default, I had to do one thing at a time. I couldn't have multiple tabs. And from a training perspective, it was brilliant because it made me focus on what's the most important thing for the day to get done and still survive and still pay my bills and still make my clients happy and go from 25 things that we all think we have to do every day to 2 or 3. And then I was limited in terms of hours of work that I could fit in the day from the coffee shop that had internet.
Yeah.
So I had to train myself to say, okay, if I have, you know, 4 hours of limited internet, what's the most important thing I can get done? And realized in the process that we busy ourselves with all these things that are really not that important or don't really move the needle. And if you get them done, great, but they're just busy work. And then I would go back to the States because we started living here, living down here for, you know, a few months out of the year. And I would train here. I'll train my attention that way. And the minute I go back to the States, slowly I'll get back into the busy, 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 multiple screens, multiple tabs. And then the year after, the same thing would happen. And so I realized part of it's really hard for us just out of the way our brain are wired. I think we seek that novelty and we seek that, you know, we seek that dopamine hits. But when the environment forces you to focus in one direction. So give you some tips. I mean, what you could do is give yourself a deadline and then work with the battery half off on your computer. And when the battery is done, your project is done.
I like that. That's cool. Yeah.
Because we expand our projects to however long time it will give. I mean, I'm working on a book for 2 years. It's not working for me very well, this strategy, but you know, a lot of things change in the process, right? So yeah, give yourself a deadline. It's a drop dead deadline. You have to send it out, ship it out, or you're out of battery.
One thing I'm thinking, so you're, you know, quote unquote doing less, but really you're more focused work. You have like these 4 hours, you got what you want to finish, and you're doing it in this period of time. What do you think that impacted in your work? Did you actually get more done, or was it what you were getting done is more important? Like, how did cutting time back like that help you in your work?
I realize you can get a lot more done in less time from that deep work. I mean, the research from McKinsey with 4 years of executives who get into flow state, you know, show that they can be 500% more productive. I would argue you can get, not every day, but if you get pretty good at aligning your goals, what really matters, with your energy, with your biorhythms, with your mental state, you can get as much done in one day than you can in 2 weeks, three weeks, possibly a month. Because, and sometimes you may have days like this, that you're going, wow, I got so much accomplished. Like, I got more done than I did in a whole month from a perspective of importance, right? From a perspective of what really matters at the end of the day. Because it's not the TikToks and the Instagrams,
yeah,
right?
It's not how much got done. It's what got done, how it kind of moved you closer to your goal. I get that. Yeah, totally.
And the same applies for companies. It's not hustle, 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 go, 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 go. We need that time away. We need that pause. We need that perspective. We need that daydreaming state to come up with new ideas, to think what's really important, to come up with new ways to going about it instead of the old way of going about it. And we don't give ourselves enough time to, for lack of a better term, do nothing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked about that a good bit on the show. Is that the the doing nothing or even hobby, like something like driving. My mom used to always joke and say that her windshield would talk to her because she would always get her ideas while she was driving. And that's just the moment where like her brain shut off. She was doing something like mindless, but that's right. when the ideas came. That's kind of, yeah. that's kind of, it sounds like what kind of similar to what you're saying.
Yeah, I love driving because you're doing something, but you're forced to sit there. And yeah, you can listen to music, but you can just sit there with your thoughts and do a bit of daydreaming as you're driving
yeah.
while paying attention. Yeah, driving is a very good stress-relieving activity for me. But, you know, but there are others. So there's power in doing hobbies, right, that engages you.
Yeah.
Like playtime and being curious and time in nature and all these times and all these things. But lately I'm leaning into experimenting a little bit with mandatory hammock time, for lack of a better term, MHT, mandatory hammock time, where you actually have to sit there for at least 15 minutes without a phone. It's really hard. It's really hard for us to do that. No music, no nothing. Just sit there.
I've always said you want to get to know your thoughts. Just go for a drive and turn off the sound. I hardly do that. I think I could probably count on one hand how many times I've done that. But I just say it in a way of like, when do we really just kind of sit in that silence? Like driving's one of the times. You know, another one is this one I do actually have a tough time doing is whenever I'm eating a meal alone, I feel like I always have to play like some sort of TV or a video or listen to music. But that's another good one where if you can just like mindfully sit there, it's like a very powerful thing.
Yeah, we've lost the art of doing nothing.
Yeah.
And to your point about mindful eating, I fixed my 20 years of digestive problems when no doctors could figure out even what was wrong with me through mindfulness and through mindful eating. And it was the hardest thing for me to do again because I was go, 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 right? And one of the rituals I had to do was sit down, make a meal, and sit down, no phones, nothing, and just eat as slowly as you can, right? And it connected my gut with my mind, which we know there is a connection between the two. And with
your gut is your second brain or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. And it comes down with the vagus nerve, which is the superpower of your nervous system, right? And it goes into there. But Western medicine just told me to take a Vicodin.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Really?
Doesn't that hurt your stomach even more?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? And it all came down to just learning to manage stress and overwhelm and anxiety and connecting with my body and connecting with my food. And it's just part of being mindful. I mean, there's an exercise in mindfulness. It's called the raisin exercise, which you take a piece of raisin and you inspect it and you smell it and you look through it and you look at the colors and you just really connect with that raisin. You think about where it grew up and who picked it up and then eventually you eat it and you taste it, but it engages all of your senses.
Yeah.
But same thing with our meals. We just rush through everything, right? We eat at our desk, so we rush through everything. We just disconnect with our nourishment and our bodies are not designed to do that.
Yeah, that is very interesting, especially because of how important and necessary something as simple as eating or drinking are. And it's something we do every day, and yet how many of us really pay attention to it?
Yeah, I mean, if you ask Silicon Valley, we'll survive on, you know, shakes and protein shakes and coffee and bulletproof coffee, and we should be good to go because you can produce more and get more done.
Yeah. That's the whole... Okay, so this is great. We're getting into the question that I wanted to ask and talk a little bit about hustle culture as it's portrayed online. What I wanted to know is... So you talk about this on your site, but what is the big hustle lie that you mentioned?
Yeah, the big hustle lie is something that started this whole hustle culture and has different roots, you know, going back to industrial era, right? The more you hustle, the more you're going to produce, the more success you're going to have.
Yeah.
And what a lot of us are not realizing is that the way we work has changed. We're using our brains. We're not doing manual work. So we can't, we continue to think that time is money. But in reality, creativity rules in a culture of productivity. So when you talk about creativity, innovation, new ideas, different ways of working, flow state, none of these are tied to hustle. And so you can do less and achieve more, but it's so counterintuitive for us. And that's why I call it the big hustle lie. You know, people like, well, you know, you're in marketing. So people like Gary Vee, who was, you know, really pushing this, who actually is no longer pushing it. I don't know if you've been tuning in. I try not to listen to him as much, but he doesn't talk about it anymore because it's such a detrimental, toxic, you know, deadly advice to give to entrepreneurs. I mean, we're literally killing ourselves with overwork. There's increased risk of heart diseases and stroke and diabetes and all these things. Yet we continue to do it when in reality, it's not, A, it's not sustainable, and B, it's not even smart. So we need to reclaim our life and well-being and joy and hobbies and fun. And it doesn't mean you don't get to do the work you love to do and you want to do, but do it in a more meaningful and more mindful way.
Yeah, I definitely think that there is a healthy way to work hard in sprints and then take breaks, but I don't think very many people know how. Quick commercial break, everybody. Just wanted to say thank you very much for being such a wonderful listener. If you like the show, please let me know. Send me an email, armand@playhardpodcast.com. We can talk about pretty much anything. I'm open and ready to chat. Let's chat. All right, back to the episode. The times that I've had to work really hard, a lot sacrifices for it. And I tell myself that it's only temporary. I'll get back to my good habits. I'll get back to everything. But yeah, I believe that there are some people that can do it right, but I think it's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, it does come to sprints, right? And I'm a firm believer in sprints. And you can work really hard on a project, but probably not longer than about 6 weeks before you go, all right, I need some time off. But also take that same approach to your day and to your week. And you can go, I think it all comes down to self-awareness and measuring your energy and being kind to yourself. So I don't have strict, you want to talk about habits, I don't really have strict habits, or how to say this, I don't have any strict routines. Because I believe in the body and the mind being in a different state every day, and instead of routines, tuning into what you need and giving it on a day-to-day basis. So if you wake up in the morning and you feel depleted and tired and sad, and then you feel like crying, I don't know what's going on, right? Sometimes these things happen. Why would you stick yourself to the same hardcore morning routine as on days when you wake up out of bed and you're energized and you feel good and you're like, okay, let's do this. You know, just your body and your mind changes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Lately I've been trying to check in a lot with my instinct, and I've been noticing that. So I have certain things have been slipping, certain routines, I guess you can say. And part of it has to do with the weather. It's been getting a lot darker earlier. It's been getting colder. It's been just like a little dreary. And that's another thing my mom was saying is like, hey, sometimes some days you got to lean into it. You got to allow that to pass, and then you get back to it when you can.
Sometimes you got to lean out of it and be and give yourself kindness and love and patience. And no, it's just a journey. It's the mountains and the valleys and the peaks and in-betweens, and being okay with that. And we just can't always go at 110 miles an hour. We think we can, but we can't.
Yeah.
And so I have these Unhustle Morning rituals. I dubbed it the Sunrise Method. And it's just a set of rituals, science-based rituals, to optimize and prepare you for a state of flow. And they...
Oh, nice.
happy to go into that if you'd like to.
Yeah, that to sounds tell great. You. A sneak preview of the ritual?
A sneak Let's preview go. Of the Unhustle Morning Rituals, the Sunrise Method, in honor of Baha. So S is for sunlight. Like you said, it's really dark, you know, outside it gets dark early. So that sunrise, you know, that melatonin is very helpful for how easy you can fall asleep in the evening. So going outside, making sure you get a little bit of sun on your face if you can,
yeah,
would be very helpful. The rituals technically start the night before because the biggest habit and the biggest well-being routine that you should really pay attention to is sleep, right?
Ain't that the truth.
And if you're sleep deprived, there's no way you're going to get into stay flow, in a flow state. And you're not going to be able to do deep work. You're not going to be creative. You're just going to be depleted, right? So the Unhustle Morning technically starts the night before, right? Going to bed early, getting enough sleep. So S for sunlight and sleep, because it helps you sleep. U for starting the day unplugged without your phone, because the minute you take a look at your emails, you get into reactive mode, and it goes downhill from there. N is for time in nature. According to the Japanese therapy of forest bathing, if you can connect with nature, you can actually, you know, decrease stress, again, increase creativity, increase sleep. So even if it's just looking at a plant in your house and just practicing a little bit of mindfulness maybe, but nature can be so calming and so beneficial for us. 2 hours a month can give you enough of the forest bathing benefits. And that's not that much to ask for, right? 2 hours a month is not that much. On a day-to-day basis, just
that's
having
like
some connection
with
nature.
Two quick hikes a month. That's all you need.
Yeah, with the exception that forest bathing is not quick hikes. It's actually slow hikes. It's actually being extremely mindful and slowing things down. R stands for read and write. There's a lot of beneficial properties from journaling. So it's almost like self-therapy. So a lot of people who are like having a hard time or struggling or need clarity, journaling can be extremely powerful, even, you know, like 3 pages. Like
very much
pages,
so.
3 pages a day by hand, not by typing, can be very powerful. I like to read something that's either inspirational or puts me in more of a creative mood or something that I enjoy. It takes 2 minutes to read a page. It doesn't take that much. I stands for intentions. So what are your intentions for the day? What are you, like, the big 2, 3 things, 7 things, 8 things, however many works for you that you want to get done, writing them on a piece of paper. I normally have them on, like, a, you know, like a little sticky note, and you can check them off as you're going along. Gives you a little bit of dopamine hit.
Yeah.
Moves you to the next thing. S stands for stillness. That's your silence, your, if you have a meditation practice, solitude, silence, just checking in with yourself. How do you feel? What do you need? What matters? You know, doing your spiritual practice if you have one. And E is for energy. So that's a big chunk of things. Anything from cold shower, bulletproof coffee, quick workout, longer workout, 7-minute workout, yoga, qigong, walking, run, depending on your energy levels, right? And so that's the sunrise rituals. But do you need to do all of them at the same time? No. You know, if you feel like you're low on energy and maybe you don't need that much of a workout, you can do breath work for energy and just sit on the couch and do some breath work, right? And if you feel like you're high on energy, well, then go have a 30-minute workout. Great. It's a good way to start the day. So you can stack all of these, right? These are stackable habits. You can stack them all. You can get the whole rituals done in 30 minutes. And so few of us actually take that time in the morning to check in with ourselves and give ourselves time and space to just take care of ourselves before we grab our phones.
Which ones of those, of the sunrise rituals, which ones do you find yourself, like when you do your internal check-in, which ones do you find that you do more often than not?
I Great question. I ask myself this every once in a while, and I've realized that I do all of them every day without necessarily paying that much attention to them. I probably don't journal every day because I spend a lot of time writing. But the rest are all there.
That's funny. Journaling is one of the ones that's like my keystone habit. Like I have to do that every day. Because that's my internal check-in. Yeah. Most of the times it's just like my journal. Yeah, if you'd read my journal, it's just me talking to myself, like asking myself questions and then answering after. But that's also how I write too. Like whenever I'm writing articles, or I've been working on a book recently as well, and then a lot of it comes out in me just like kind of asking my subconscious, like, what do we want to say about this, and then continuing.
Right. See, I do that through meditation and like putting my brain into more of a, you know, different brain waves to get to that level. But yeah, it's whatever works for you, right?
Yeah, it really is. I'm funny.
I live in a fairly small space, and I'm trying to figure out, I already have a whole bunch of journals, and I'm trying to figure out, what do I do with all these journals?
I've been rereading mine. I try to. I don't do this as often as I say, but I've been trying to reread it, and then I have a highlighter, two different highlighters. One's for actionable items, and one's for like insights I find on myself, different colors. And then it's pretty interesting to like go back and see like what of the things that I say I'm going to do did I actually do. And sometimes you're like, wow, I was writing about this 2 years ago, like I'm totally doing that now. Other times it's like the insights, it's like, wow, I can't believe this is where that thought came from, and I still like hold that true to this day. It's right. Just like a really it's something I really enjoy. I do like going back, but it's been a while since I've done that.
Yeah, I'd love to go back and start writing. I started journaling when I was, I want to say 18. No, 14. Wow. I started journaling when I was 14, and I wish I had my journals from back then. You know, I moved country, so same. I left them. And I need to take it up again is a good habit. So you're going to inspire me to get back into it. I do have my journal right here. I just need to, I mean, I use my journal on a day-to-day basis. I just need to get into it.
Yeah. So one other thing that I was wondering is, as someone who's a very high-performing person, yet also high-life-performing, like things are going, like it seems very balanced. Like how do you continue to achieve while also living for yourself? Because I feel like in life we're told, and society says, if you want to achieve and do great things, a lot of that has to go, like, be sacrificed. A lot of your own personal happiness in life. How do you balance those two?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think the answer to that is, how do you define success on your terms, right? Mm. How do you create that definition of success, which I've spent years researching and trying to figure out and designing my life that way? And my definition has changed a little bit from achievements tied to work to more about, I want to live in a place I love, surrounded with people I love. I want to do the things I love doing, and I want to contribute to the world in a meaningful and positive way and have a lot of fun while I'm doing all of this. So every once in a while, on a regular basis, I check in with myself when I get into that state of overwhelm and anxiety and like, I'm not doing enough. The business is not growing fast enough, because we all do, right?
Yeah.
Then I have to check in with myself and remind myself, you know, as long as I'm pointing into that direction that I currently believe success for me looks like, and as long as I'm on that journey, then that's good, right? It's just being patient, being kind to yourself, and I guess not necessarily... As a high achiever, you know, I have very high expectations of myself, and I still, every once in a while, put myself in a situation where it's like I have too much to do, which immediately puts me into, I'm overwhelmed. It's the opposite of the state I want to feel in. So checking in with myself and working hard on eliminating and minimizing the things that are not necessarily bringing me joy.
Yeah. And... you answered another question I had. I was going to ask, what would you say to someone who's on the complete opposite end of the the scale. If they're not really doing much for their work, they're doing purely things for their life, but they still are missing that other side of the coin, the other balance. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that again, that comes from checking in with yourself and knowing, like, am I too much on the life side? Like, should I be focusing a little more on work? But
I mean, between burnout and boredom, there is alignment.
Yeah.
And that's that flow state we're all seeking. And if you're living in alignment with the life you want to design and the work you want to do with your values and with whatever purpose you want to have in life, then I think you're in that space of having more joy, having more happiness,
yeah.
Right? When we get either bored or burned out and anxious and overwhelmed when we get out of that alignment.
I like that.
Yeah, self-awareness is probably the first step in knowing whether you're in alignment or not in alignment.
Yeah, that's
wonderful. Knowing your values helps. Having purpose helps. There's actually four different desires based on the old Vedic tradition, which is yoga, that your soul desires at any point of time. So there is dharma, which is purpose,
mm-hmm.
Right? There is artha, which is the means to get to your purpose. So that may be your health, that may be money. There's kama, which is joy. It's relationships, it's joy, it's time in nature, it's whatever, you know, your hobbies would fall into the kama category. And then there is moksha, which is self-actualization and ultimate freedom. So that would be like Ram Dass leaving Harvard to go to India, right? So at any point in time, if you're in touch with your soul and what does your soul desire, you would probably lean into one or the other of these.
Yeah.
Let me get the dogs in. Taking commercial break. Commercial break.
One more commercial break. Milena's dogs were just being loud and chatty, and she had to go take a break to go talk to them. Tell them to calm down. Which they did, for the most part. Okay, back to the episode.
We also changed throughout time, right? I mean, when I was burned out, and I did a whole bunch of research into how am I going to find this new way of living and what does life really want out of me and what do I want? And, you know, there was a lot of deep soul searching.
Yeah.
And this was helpful to me because I said, all of a sudden I realized, hey, I'm missing more purpose. And that got me on that quest of what's the bigger purpose in me. And that got me to, let's start a rebellion against hustle culture. I mean, that sounds pretty
yeah.
big to me. You know, then things may change. And all of a sudden you're like, I need more artha right now, or I need more kama right now. And just saying, okay, well, maybe this new year is going to be a new desire.
Yeah.
And just having that clarity, I think, is very helpful. We start suffering and struggling when we
yeah.
don't have clarity.
I think the essence of all that really can be tied down into living in alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is, I guess, I don't know, it's like really cheesy that I do, but it's one of the most helpful things that I do, is that self-check-in. What I do is I ask myself, is this what the best version of me would do? And just that simple question helps me live in alignment with work, with life, with pretty much everything, because it's like, okay, the best version of me is doing good at work, but at the same time has fun hobbies and cares about the relationships I have in my life and cares about, you know, my dog or like making music. Like, I care about all those things, yet I also care about the impact I leave on others and what I want to provide for the world. So there is like all these things, and it's very living not in alignment is knowing what you want to do and achieve and be, knowing who you want to be and not taking the right steps to be that person. And that's living in alignment is a very powerful way of living.
Yeah, and the more of us that can lean into that direction, the better off we're all going to be. But, you know, there's so much pressure on ourselves, external and internal, and marketing and advertising and messages. And yeah. So you live in L.A.?
San Diego.
San Diego, yeah. So you walk outside on the street and there's just constant comparison in human nature, you know.
Yeah.
Asking us to compare ourselves against others and messages and, you know, I don't know how many thousands of messages that we get bombarded with. And we're constantly consuming information, constantly putting things into our brains. And we don't really give ourselves, going back to the, you know, the solitude and in our own thoughts, because that alignment comes from knowing what we want. And often we don't necessarily know what we want.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And I'm sure you can relate, is being a marketer. When you start realizing the things other companies do to market, like the little subtle things starting to pop up, and you're like, oh, wow. Like, as a kid, I didn't know a lot of these things were, like, all just geared towards your psychology and getting you to want to buy something. And it's pretty nuts when you start to actually study it and how well these tactics work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, now let's get to my favorite part of the show, talking about what you like to do for fun. You got a couple really cool things. So we talked a little bit about kiteboarding, but lately your newest obsession has been free diving. How'd you get into that?
Well, I live on the beach, and in the summertime the water was really warm, and so we snorkeled a lot, and then I realized that free diving is something that is readily available right outside my backyard. And so I've been exploring more and more, and it's quickly becoming a really big addiction from very different perspectives. But, you know, it's my happy place. You know, go swim with fish. And when you're in that zone, you know, being in the zone and also working with your breath and working with your body and understanding all the science behind it,
yeah,
I had
it's very
a magical
meditative.
Very meditative. Yeah, I had a magical experience swimming with dolphins this last summer, which was just amazing. And so it becomes a good hobby for me to have while I'm living here. But it also could be very, you know, it's a high performance state at the same time, right?
Yeah,
you can't mess it up. I did have an incident where I accumulated too much CO2. So it puts you in a you have to know what you're doing, and you have to be very mindful, and you have to take your safety stops and all that stuff. So, I like
free diving is like snorkeling's older brother. You got to be a lot better at holding your breath. How long can you hold your breath for?
You know, I don't know. I don't look at it from a measurement perspective. I look at it from an enjoyment perspective, and it's a good question. Next summer, maybe I'll get more into that. But,
maybe
I don't know.
Not knowing is even better, because you could probably be down longer, because you don't know what the limit really is. You know, you put a number to it, and then it's like, now I know. Versus
right. It becomes
you get down there, something happens. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. And kite surfing. Lately, I've been switching into kite surfing. That's, you know, that's a great sport for me to do. And mountain biking. And I told you I was learning to play the ukulele.
Yeah.
Learn Spanish.
You got any favorite songs on the uke?
Oh, no, I'm so intro into this.
I'll send some over. Actually,
I can take some lessons from you.
Yeah, it's a fun one. What I noticed is, in comparison, have you played guitar at all?
No.
In comparison to something like guitar, the left hand's much easier. You don't have to, well, if you're like right-handed normally, the left hand where you're playing notes is not as difficult as the strumming. With the ukulele, it's all in the strumming pattern. So if you can get that down, you can play like a ton of songs. The chords are readily available.
Yeah, I like that. I got back into working out, something that I realized I wasn't that good at for a few, you know, it kind of, I think it was the pandemic and I kind of got out of it. I mean, there's movement, and I would move and I would hike and I would mountain bike.
Yeah, it
and,
seems
you
like
know,
you're a very active person.
Yeah, active, but I wasn't working out. Like, you know, and I just found this.
Like weightlifting?
Like strength training. Training.
Yeah.
You know, I was into yoga, a very steady yoga practice. And then, you know, what happened is I would do this on Hustle Morning Rituals, and then I wanted to use my early morning time for my creativity. And then eventually kind of ease into work. But now I want to have that break in between, like, my first creative session, workout, and then work. So it's just a different way of doing it. But I found a great community of girls down here, and it's been inspiring to be around other people and just to kind of motivate you to push to a workout. So I'm really liking that, again, from an entrepreneurial perspective, I feel like, or for anyone, really, we get stressed and overwhelmed and busy. And when we get too busy, we leave working at the end or the bottom of the to-do list. And it's really what we need to lean into to release that stress and to make us feel good and to gain that clarity. And
I totally agree.
Yeah. Something I need to remind myself.
Some of the clearest I've felt mood-wise, creative-wise, just like mental clarity. Some of the best mental clarity I felt was in the period of October when I was doing a calorie burning challenge. I was doing a ton of cardio for that, and I had always been a strength training person myself. Like, I always preferred lifting weights, but this totally shifted the way I see running, cardio, even stuff like elliptical or just like playing sports, because I had never felt more clear than when I was like burning calories. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I think it's totally something that I agree. I see it in people around me where it's like the first thing to go is working out.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it in myself. Like, I want that to be my number one habit in the morning. But a lot of times I'll push it on to later in the day, and it keeps getting pushed on till all of a sudden it's almost bedtime. And I'm like, nah, I'll start tomorrow.
I don't have energy. Yeah, that one's big. That one's big for sleep, for anything, for creativity.
Yeah, sleep, it is big.
For also anything.
The best sleep I got, because the second my head touched the pillow, I was knocked out. I was so tired.
Yeah,
I was, like,
exactly.
Mentally stimulated, but, like, physically tired. So it was, like, the perfect just pass out, go to sleep, wake up, work out again.
You know how I think about it in the morning, you know, where I'm kind of starting my morning slowly. I think, how am I going to... What am I going to do for fun?
I like that.
Where am I going to find joy in the day for fun? It could be something simple as cooking a nice meal, you know, but that also requires planning. So what am I doing for fun? That's kind of important. It's been an important question on a day-to-day basis. And then how am I moving, right? What's my movement?
Milena, what was your fun thing for today?
My fun thing for today is my husband and a friend went to La Paz, and they're going to bring back a whole bunch of groceries, and we're going to cook a nice meal.
Ooh.
But before that, I'm going to take the three dogs down to the beach, because we're taking care of two extra dogs. And I already took them this morning for a little hike. So today is a doggy kind of day.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And I would still like to go kite surfing. But depends if I'll have more wind. But it looks like people are still out there, so I may jump on a surfboard right after this and call it a day and go think. You know, for me, sometimes it's a release and it puts you in flow and you could be mindful. But sometimes some of my best creative ideas about my book and everything else come while I'm out on the ocean. So it's not all fun. It could be very productive rest time.
Yeah, I think one of my guests previously was talking about how some of the most productive things you can do is to not work and to have fun. And I totally agree.
That's a counterintuitive approach that we just don't understand.
And it also can't be abused. Like, some people are like, okay, let me just have fun. No, it's like, I find it best in myself is when I'm feeling a little stuck. Like, when I've been working really hard in particular, that's when I need to take the break, have fun, and where everything just kind of clears and reshuffle the deck a little bit.
We also have to be careful a little bit from a high performance point of view. You know, we always want to do things that makes us perform better. And sometimes it's okay to just go have fun and not expect that it's going to make you more creative or more clear, you know, anything. You just do it for the joy of it, right? So I have to balance these two.
All right. Well, time for the closing questions. These are just some more fun questions to end up the interview. But yeah, now after talking to you, I'm excited. I'm curious as to what. So the first one is, what kind of music do you listen to?
Oof, that's a good question. I'm, you know, old school. So while I'm working, I listen to some creative kind of flow of state music. Sometimes that might be classical. Sometimes it's like just a creative music playlist on YouTube that I find. For fun, you know, I like Leonard Cohen, UB40.
Really? I heard one. I know one song from him. I'm trying to remember. I'm not gonna think of the name, but his voice. He's got a deep voice.
Yeah, yeah. What else is on my phone? Let's see what's on my phone. That would help me out. I'm so bad with like bands. Hold on a second. Let me turn my phone on. It's bad that I have my phone with me, actually. How about Beats Antique? You should. You may know Bomba Estéreo. Do you know Mamba Estéreo? DJ Dre, Foo Fighters, Kings of Leon.
That's a good band.
MC Yogi. The Polish Ambassador. U2.
Classic.
Yeah, pretty classic kind of bands. How about you? What do you like to listen to?
My favorite genre is funk, 70s funk, hence why I love playing the bass. I've just always liked the rhythm, the groove of that. I mainly listen to, like, probably alternative rock, indie rock, a good bit of rap lately. There's been some good rap albums coming out. I kind of took a break because I didn't like what was coming out, but now I'm starting to get back into it. A lot of classic rock as well. So, like, 80s, 70s, 60s rock. Yeah. I'll listen to... I generally like trying different types of music and seeing what I like. So, I've... listeners will know I've expressed that country is not my favorite genre. But there are many different, like, country songs that I like, that I listen to. Right. I really do like... So, I like certain instruments as well. Like, one of these days, I'm going to pick up the banjo. I just think it's fascinating. I think it's got a great sound. So country's not my thing, but...
great bands with a banjo. Yeah. Have you seen them?
Yeah, wow, but like bluegrass. Really bluegrass is a genre I really like. I don't know if you've ever heard, there's like such thing as indie bluegrass, like folk bluegrass. So it's more, you feel like you're walking through a forest, but also with a banjo. So it's pretty great.
Fun, yeah.
I listen to all different types.
You'll have to send me some stuff. I need help in my music department.
Yeah, I will. What kind of movie or TV do you listen to or watch?
Well, considering currently we don't have TV in the house, that's a very good question. In terms of movies, you know, I like international, sometimes drama, sometimes action, sometimes comedy. Braveheart.
That's pretty sick. I actually haven't seen Braveheart.
You haven't seen Braveheart?
No. That's usually the reaction I get. Yeah. Mel Gibson?
Yeah.
Is it in? Yeah.
It's an old movie, yeah.
Yeah. And what books are you reading right now?
What books am I reading right now? It looks like The Big Magic rereading.
Ooh, nice.
Elizabeth Gilbert. I have quite a few at the moment, mainly on my Kindle. But currently reading... I forget the title, I just downloaded it, but it's combining the Enneagram with spirituality, Enneagram types with spirituality, so I'm kind of interested
getting into that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what your Enneagram type is?
I think I'm a 7.
A 7?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure I'm an 8. What is it? The Challenger, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like a good challenge. That's true. I do like to argue and debate.
But it's good. I think 7 is more into the adventure and the fun.
Yeah, I can see that. Definitely with all the... I mean, you're kite surfing. Next time we talk, you'll probably be with the wingsuit. So that makes sense.
I used to have a surfboard living on my wall here. Yeah.
I think, have you ever read the book, The Artist Way by Julia Cameron?
Yeah.
I was going to say, you would really like it because of a lot of the conversation we've had is very similar to, like, I actually, my method of looking back on my journal and highlight, that is, like, exactly from her book, The Artist Way. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that book. And I realized that I've been doing artist dates.
Yes, yes.
For all my life, you know.
I had the hardest time doing that.
Did you?
I still look back on it. I'm like, why did I have such a tough time just hanging out with myself? You know, my favorite one was, though, I bought myself a Lego set. And for a few hours, I just built Legos.
Fun.
All right. Finally, where can people find you? I know you have a podcast. You're coming out with a book. Your company as well. Where can they get a hold of all of that?
Yeah, the easiest thing is just my website, unhustle.com.
Easy. I'll put that in the notes down below.
Everything's there. Yep.
Sweet. All right. Thank you very much for joining me. This was a great episode.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And can't wait to stay in touch with you and see where this relationship takes us. I have to get you on my podcast as well.
Yeah, this is what I like to talk about. We have similar, similar interests, so that'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much.